So we've got to tackle this challenge. And I believe the right way to do it is to live up to an old-fashioned principle of shared responsibility. That means everybody has to do their part. But finding savings in our domestic spending only gets you so far. We're also going to have to find savings in places like the defense budget. You know, as your commander-in-chief, I will not cut a penny if it undermines our national security. So the amount of taxes you pay doesn't depend on whether you can hire a fancy accountant or not. And we've also got to end tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans.
Well, again, I have absolutely no control over somebody else's power of delusion, but I must endeavor nonetheless. Welcome back, everybody. Ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. This is the oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. That, of course, the musings of President Obama. But this guy's been, like, off the mark on a number of things, and I mean in ways that are just so empirically verifiable, it's not even funny. Hat tip to Jeff Holzman for Talk Radio News Service. He's got a little piece out here. The title is Demand Causing Gas Prices to Spike, Says Obama. And he references Obama's quote. Well, he starts off with wondering why gas prices have skyrocketed lately. According to President Obama, the answer is simple: growing demand. During the third leg of his town hall tour this week, the president suggested that travelers can ease their pain at the pump by putting fewer miles on their vehicles. Quote, one of the key ways we're going to get gas prices down is just to use less oil, Obama told an audience gathered in Electrotherm, a green energy company located in Reno, Nevada. I got to tell you, also, as Jeff points out, according to the Department of Energy, what the president says doesn't make any sense. Because according to them, demand for fuel is actually lower now compared to this time last year when prices on average were nearly a dollar less. In fact, the Associated Press noted today that many Americans have decided to cut down on their driving or are canceling vacation plans due to frighteningly high gas prices. So we have that which is going down still having no impact on prices that are going up. These results would seem to be a skosh counterintuitive to what the president had earlier stated. We have assisting me in the opining department, old friend of the show, my regular for this part of the day and this part of the week, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio talk host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. Welcome back, Mark. How are you today?
I'm good, Alan. How are you?
Doing well. And I should mention Mark's website, www.alannathanisalwayscorrectandicannevergetitright.com. Then again, I'm just kidding. It's obviously www.marklevineradio.com. And again, good to have you, my friend. Let's get right to what just broke. I found this fascinating. And I'm not pulling something on you. It just happened out of the blue. You know what? Now I don't have it. But essentially, the president has decided to start a task force to see whether or not we're being price gouged or if other things are afoot. Wait a minute. I think I can bring it up. Here it is right now. I apologize. CBS News. Here it is. With gas prices rising, Obama announces a new gas task force. With gas prices nationwide averaging close to $4 per gallon, President Obama announced today that the U.S. Attorney General is creating a task force to root out any causes of fraud or manipulation in the oil and gas markets that might affect gas prices. He goes on to say, and I quote, we are going to make sure that no one is taking advantage of the American consumers for their own short-term gain, Mr. Obama said at a town hall meeting at the renewable energy company, again, Electrotherm in Reno, Nevada. Let me ask you this. Isn't he really just finding a way of dodging the benefits of more oil drilling? He seems to be essentially spending our tax dollars on his political decoys. He knows this is the best way to ensure that he doesn't really have to have an argument about whether or not we should continue with more oil drilling, especially in the outer continental shelf. What say you, Mark Levine?
I say two things. One, Alan, are you denying that energy speculation has been the cause of the run-up in oil prices again and again and again? I mean, Enron 10 years ago. In 2008, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, in its official report said it was the vast majority of the run-up was due to oil speculation, that in fact there were 27 times the amount of oil on the market was being speculated. So this is something that comes from the Enron loophole. It comes from a law that Enron got into the books in 2000, and what that law does is it allows Enron and other people to be exempt from the regular kind of trading commission that you have.
Well, you're not alone in your feelings. You're not alone in your feelings on this. Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, they've asserted that we should start reining in speculators versus raising offshore production. But
well,
you know what? Let me ask you
different.
This, Mark.
I'd like to talk about
Here's my turn, though. Here's my turn. If soaring prices are triggered by speculators predicating their investments on the assumption of low supply, then wouldn't replacing that belief with a perception of increased supply accordingly reduce those prices? You really can't have one without the other, Mark.
No, you really can't, because if you have increased supply in the United States, the first ones would kick in around 2030. And right now, the difference, maybe 1% or 2% in the world market, in fact, it's been shown it would be about 3 cents of the price of gas if we were to do more offshore drilling. Saudi Arabia, by simply raising 100 billion, however many billions of barrels, they've got so much more oil than all the extra oil that the United States has put together. They just put out more or put less more, and that would counteract any amount of offshore drilling we are to do. They could control the
price. No, you're forgetting that every country is allowed to provide for itself before they put it on the international market. You can do that.
But Saudi Arabia has more than enough to take care of itself. It controls the world prices.
No, but if it allows us to reduce our reliance on foreign oil, I don't see how your argument's holding water.
I want to reduce our reliance on foreign oil. Absolutely, I do. My point is that our increasing offshore drilling in 2030, I would hope by 2030, we have enough green energy and fuel cells and wind energy and all the other kind that we don't need to rely on foreign oil.
But unfortunately, you know as well as I do that green energy options right now cost more to generate than they provide in profits.
But new oil doesn't come into production until 2030, which is why it can't affect oil prices today.
What do you get that 2030? I mean, you sound like what the speaker was a couple of years. I mean, a former speaker House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, when she was contending that in 2008, she was saying that drilling now would not yield results for another 10 years. This is a position also echoed by Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Of course, by that measure, this means that we could have been swimming in surplus oil right now had we ignored them a decade ago when they were saying the same thing.
Well, you could say two decades ago.
It's like a maneuvered self-fulfilling prophecy with a catch-22 ending. I don't buy it.
Well, you don't have to buy it behind me. All you have to do is look at the think tanks on this. Look at the EIA, look at the U.S. Energy Task Force. There's a lot of, they all say that basically in 2030, if we have new offshore drilling, it will lower a few pennies a gallon, 3 cents is the latest projection, that it will lower it. That's not the issue. The issue is speculation. And you got to understand,
this is inextricably tied together. Again, if you start, you keep talking about we need to rein in the speculators instead of having more offshore drilling. But think about it. If soaring prices are triggered by speculators predicating their investments on the assumption of low supply, then replacing that belief with a perception of increased supply would reduce those prices. You really cannot have one without the other.
I don't think so. Let me give you a specific. I got specifics in front of me. I just cut it up on the internet. The U.S. Energy Information Administration report, the impact of limitations on access to oil and natural gas resources in the federal outer continental shelf. This is my source for saying that in 2030, U.S. gasoline prices would be lower 3 cents a gallon if we are to start drilling now.
But that's predicated on nothing but nonsense. It's predicated on nothing but nonsense. We're going to revisit this upon our return. Mark Levine sticking around. Folks, you are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach and more fighting on the dueling debt reduction proposals between President Obama and House Budget Chair Republican Paul Ryan. Although the debt ceiling debate rages on, and how are we being incompletely served by both the left and the right, especially the left? So much to get into, and as usual, so little time. My regular for this part of the hour on Thursday is none other than Mark Levine, former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. talk radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. You can also check out more about Mark on www.marklevineradio.com. Mark and I have known each other for a number of years, and we also have the interesting shared experience of having both been the hosts of the same television show.
That's true. I don't know that you want to go there, Alan.
No, but it was still fun, and it's fun to talk about. But Anyway, Mark, let me ask you, as we turn our sights ahead, I know we were talking about... Oh, by the way, also a very quick shout-out to Phil Kirpin. He is Vice President of Americans for Prosperity. We had him on our show a little bit, and at the end of the segment, I indicated that we'd have him on the following segment. My bad entirely. I forgot we had Mark scheduled, so I explained it to Phil, and we'll be having Phil Kirpin back on in the not-too-far-distant future. We'll be talking to him again next week about having him on, well, maybe even as early as next week. So anyway, Mark, to you, as we turn our sights onto the battle ahead. I know we were talking about the environment. We can get back to it in a bit. But as we turn our sights onto this battle over the debt ceiling, do you ultimately see, number one, yes, the debt ceiling will be raised, and number two, yes, there will be some spending cuts connected to it, even though the Democrats have insisted that there should be no ties? What say you?
I think, number one, the debt limit has to be raised, period. It just has to be raised. If it doesn't, we have the equivalent of an apocalypse on our economy. It would be worse than the Great Depression. The United States has never defaulted on its debt, including during the Civil War.
You're right about everything but the defaulting on the debt. I just had Tony Blankley on.
When?
We would never default on the debt because the dollars that we have coming in would first go there. Now, granted, it would mean severe. It would still be catastrophic. I'm not saying it would be catastrophic, but for reasons having nothing to do with supposedly not honoring our debt.
Well, let me
in order to honor
that.
Our debt, we would maybe breach the covenant that we have with our fellow Americans in many areas and with many programs. I'll give you that. But believe me, the one thing we would not jeopardize is the full faith and credit of the United States. We would not default on our debt because any of the revenues coming in would first go for that before other things. Do you understand,
Alan,
now?
The
have you been disabused of the aforementioned misunderstanding? Do you grasp the nucleic rudiments of what I'm telling you?
Alan, it depends on which date. You see, in May, the debt limit runs out. Now, it's true that Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner has said that he can do tricks and traps and all kinds of creative accounting.
Not connected to what I just said.
July.
Not connected to what I just said.
No, it is connected. Because it means he's going to pay off the debt. You're right. From May to July, we will technically be out of money, but he's going to find ways to raid other things to pay off. But by July 8th, at least according to the Treasury Secretary, that's when, yes, we'd have to default. But everyone knows we can't default. Republicans have said, even Paul Ryan has said in his budget that he wants to raise the debt ceiling by some $8 trillion.
Well, then if we can't default, then doesn't that mean if the Republicans attach spending cuts, they'll get them? Because we can't let a default happen. Because then, if the president decided to veto anything, he would be the one seen as triggering said default.
I don't think so, because I think the American people understand the difference between forcing a default and trying to force your way. I mean, why can't the Democrats say, all right, we won't raise the debt limit unless you raise taxes on rich people? The Republicans would say, that's completely unfair. You need to have a separate vote on that. Well, of course you need a separate vote on that. The debt limit is really just a nuclear button that nobody should push. They may throw in some kind of cover, CYA, kind of, we've agreed to some kind of minor spending cuts. But the heart of the matter is nobody should push this nuclear button. Democrats shouldn't push it. Republicans shouldn't push it. And responsible Republicans like even Paul Ryan and Speaker of the House John Boehner know that.
Well, you know, it's true. Obama's, I think, feeling a little more pressure, though, from his own party. Matter of fact, let me look at something here. Associated Press. Here's the headline. Democrats join threat to hold up debt ceiling vote without spending cuts. President Obama is starting to feel pressure from his own party to tie spending cuts to a vote to raise the debt limit, even as the administration expresses confidence that Congress will ultimately raise the cap. I'm thinking, well, yes, Mr. President, the debt limit probably will be raised, but if you veto a debt ceiling bill because it has spending cuts attached to it, you will not only expose how you're losing political ground, but also the supposed moral high ground on which you asserted the need to raise the debt ceiling so as to avoid the ruining of the country's full faith and credit. You know who the guy is that's saying he's going to vote against it? Senator Mark Pryor, Democrat from the great state of Arkansas, and others are joining him as well.
Alan,
he's out there saying, this is what he said, I swear to God, this is what he said. Wait a minute, here it is. What I've told anyone who will listen to me in Washington, including my leadership, is that I'm not going to vote for that unless there is a real and meaningful commitment to debt reduction. This is what he told the Political Animals Club at its monthly meeting at the governor's mansion, again, according to the Associated Press. And he's gaining in company. There's a bunch of blue dogs on the House side that are pretty much singing the same song. What say you to them?
I say, Alan, there are spending cuts and there are spending cuts. If they find, okay, we're going to cut the cowboy poetry in Reno, Nevada, along with the debt limit, I don't think we'll have any problem with that. If, however, the Republicans say that we will not raise the debt limit unless we end Medicare for seniors, then Democrats will say, we call your bluff. go ahead, go default.
Well, I think no. You just said something very important. You just said something very, very important.
Right.
So let me offer you your well-deserved blandishments, because when you say something important, that constitutes a rarity. No, I'm just kidding. What I mean is, you said there are cuts, and then there are cuts.
Right.
There you go. So indeed, we could have a situation in which the debt ceiling is used as a way to leverage more cuts from this party than would otherwise be the case, as long as they're not off in left field or right field, call it what you will, then indeed they are very plausible, are they not? Because I mean, think about it. You got Democrats out there saying, here, also the same piece. A number of Democrats from the Associated Press, a number of Democrats in the rank and file have echoed what the president is saying. Dozens of House members have signed on to a letter from Representative Peter Welch, Democrat from Vermont, beautiful state, by the way, Vermont, calling for a quote-unquote clean extension of the debt ceiling, in other words, without any attachment.
Right.
Quote, here it is. The debt ceiling vote is about one thing, affirming that America pays its bills, unquote, they wrote, noting that the vote would not automatically authorize new spending, but rather allow the country to pay off existing obligations. Now, my question to you, sir, is if we don't reduce these obligations, how will we ever reduce our reliance on the very borrowing we're trying to reduce? It's counterintuitive.
We have to raise taxes back to the level they've been at, rather than this extraordinary low level, which we've never seen in modern American history ever. We have to put taxes back where they used to be, where they were. They were much, much higher under Ronald Reagan, who's supposed to be conservative. They were vastly higher under Dwight Eisenhower, Kennedy. Every other president of the United States has had higher taxes than now on the millionaires and billionaires. And until we do that, we're never going to seriously handle the debt. As far as the debt ceiling, I think if the Democrats vote for a clean bill and the Republicans say no, and we reach apocalypse, economic apocalypse, the American party is going to be, the American people will be very, very angry at both parties, but particularly at the Republicans for not allowing us to pay our debts.
Well, it would strike me necessary for people to realize, as long as you brought up Kennedy and Reagan as well, they remembered something, or they embraced a lesson that's been apparently subsequently forgotten. We're always forgetting the lessons of Kennedy, who again said that it's a paradoxical truth that when you lower tax rates, you increase tax revenues
from
because
70%
you allow
to 50%,
the
you're right.
You allow that many more people. You allow that many more people, that many more small and mid-sized businesses to hire that many more workers who are then added to the taxpaying community, which by default means more cash for the Treasury. Reagan replicated that logic. They both lowered the tax rates and found oodles of money coming in, just floods of money.
Zero, if we lower it to zero, then we'll get even more, right?
No. Zero is nonsensical. Any number above zero allows the principle its viable place in our lexicon of thought.
If
it worked during Kennedy and it worked during Reagan, why are we so disconnected from the belief that it would work today?
Alan, they lowered it from 90 to 70 and 70 to 50.
A difference in percentage does not a difference in principle make. A difference, you know as well as I do, that a difference in percentage does not a difference in principle make.
Sure it does.
No, not in the principle of the argument, not the money.
Of course it does.
No.
The Laffer curve has only been shown to work at the 90% level where it was under Eisenhower. If you lower taxes from 90% to 80%, yes, more tax money comes in. If you lower taxes from 30% to 2%, I guarantee you less tax money comes in, and there's not a single economist in the country that disagrees with me.
But to the degree that you raise taxes as a way to counter what had thus far been waste, fraud, and abuse, is to an extent enabling that same waste, fraud, and abuse.
This isn't about waste, fraud, and abuse. Every politician talks about waste, fraud, and abuse, Alan. There's not that much. The only waste, fraud, and abuse that I know of that still exists in our system is in the defense budget.
Otherwise,
there's not much left.
You know who disagrees with you? The President of the United States. And he did so in the form of Obamacare. He said, we're going
to
go ahead and secure, let me finish, we're going to go ahead and secure $500 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse to maintain the solvency of Medicare. Oh, but then he said, we're also going to use that same $500 billion to fund the rest of the bill, which is like you and I getting to write our paycheck twice on the same deposit slip. It's double counting. Now, if the president thought he could secure $500 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse as a way to both maintain the solvency of Medicare as well as funding the rest of Obamacare, then clearly, even he believes there sure as hell is a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse.
$5 million is a subsidy to health insurance companies. That's all it is.
So you disagree with the president.
We're
glad to have that on record.
We're getting rid of that subsidy.
Mark Levine, always a blast. You're a hell of a guy. Mark Levine, one of my regulars each and every Thursday this time. Give us a listen. Folks, you are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Nathan.